Here we go. Here we go. Thank you for listening to Stoop Kids, a Hey Arnold podcast. Hopefully, this podcast is fine for an artistic type like you. I'm Cody Narveson, and you can find me on Twitter at Cody_BH.
I'm Harry Mack, and you can find me on Twitter at Shiitake Harry.
And I'm Emily Suey. You can find me on Instagram at Emily Suey.
Who is our super producer Jason Daphnis going to marry? That squirrel? I don't know, but you can find him on Twitter at Nintendoofus. You can also keep up with the podcast on Twitter and Instagram at Stoop Kids Pod.
With a Z, with a Z, we spell Stoop Kids with a Z. Grab your headphones from your neck, Sherry, and listen in for free. Soup du jour, hot hors d'oeuvres, those are not things that we serve. Try the podcast, it's for winners. Don't believe me, ask listeners. They review, they can rate. After all, miss, they are great. And discussion here is never second best. Go on, connect your AirPods, press play, and you're there. God with a Z, with a Z, with a Z.
Today we're here to talk about episode 85 of Hey Arnold. For those of you keeping track at home, that is season 5, episode 5, going by production code order. We're going to start, as we always do, with episode 8, which is called Stuck in a Tree. Original air date, January 5th, 2001. The Wikipedia-sanctioned episode summary is as follows. Arnold gets stuck in a tree with Harold and Eugene. The end. Special non-Wikipedia note, something that I wanted to call out, and I think the rest of us were kind of aware of as the episode played out. This and four more subsequent episodes, as is the case, a new voice actor for Eugene. The name of the actor is Blake Ewing, who some listeners and co-hosts here might know maybe recognize his face and likeness from the 1994 Little Rascals movie where he played Waldo the Rich Kid. So that's something. You know what else is something? The fine folks that made this episode possible. Christine Kolosoff was in the director's chair for this one, and the writing credits for this one went to Joseph the Purdman Purdy and Steve Vixton. So, veteran crew on this one. Let's break it down. Harry, and we'll start with you. What did you think about this episode?
Yeah, well, first of all, as an aside, I was really looking forward to the little warble from Be Our Guest, and you really nailed that. So congratulations. That was
not
impressive.
Gonna lie, I was most nervous for that warble.
Yeah, the little warble, it's tough, but I think You really nailed it. So well done, Be Our Podcast Guest. I love this episode. I think it's kind of iconic. I am really surprised that it's a season 5 episode because I remember it. Like, it's one of the top 10 maybe Hey Arnold episodes that I recall. It's, in my opinion, one of the most iconic Eugene episodes. I think that it does a really great job of like leveraging Eugene's mythology as established throughout the show. I really love that by this episode in season 5, Eugene is like he's like more than just a jinx. He's like this like horror movie monster or something where it's just like you cross his path and like he's gonna drive you out of your mind, right? Like, it's not even worse than being stuck in the tree is being stuck in the tree with Eugene, because his optimism is so like infuriating. And I just love the energy that this has. I think that like it's a great character study of all three of these characters. I love Harold kind of going back to his bullying roots and then having his comeuppance. I think that the humor in this episode is really sharp. And I even really like the overall sort of point of this episode, which is that like when you're in a stupid situation like that, sometimes you have to just sort of like You know, like I like that they managed to walk this tightrope where, like, Eugene's optimism is infuriating and the episode is clearly sympathetic about how annoying it is, but he's also right. But, like, the episode holds both of those ideas as equal, right? It's like, it's not getting mad at Harold or Arnold for being, like, upset and annoyed and infuriated by Eugene, even though ultimately Eugene's optimism wins out, right? Like, wins, carries the day. So I kind of love this idea that, like, when you're in a strained situation like this, just keeping your head and sort of, like, staying cool and even being very, like, tolerant of other people's idiosyncrasies is the way to go, right? Like, I think Arnold and Harold have to sort of, like, learn, well, all three of them really have to learn to put up with each other, and keep their heads. And like, it turns out that the interpersonal is the real problem that they have to confront here, even more than the fact that they're stuck in the tree. So, yeah, I don't know. I think all of the beats work for me really well. The lawnmower guy is so funny to me. I really love that joke. One of my favorite Chocolate Boy interactions of the entire series, I think, and a hilarious ending. So yeah, I really like this episode. I'm interested to hear what you guys think. But, like, to me, this was sort of heartening because, like, I not to again be overly cynical, but I was a little bit worried that some of the best episodes were behind us, right? And I think that, like, episodes like this kind of show me that season 5 still has some gas left in the tank, and I'm really excited about that.
Yeah, me as well. I'm going to look it up while Emily gives her takes just so I can correct myself, but I'm going to stake my Cody flag on the claim that I'm pretty sure I saw Craig was the voice of the voice of the lawnmower guy. Again, I'll correct myself if I'm wrong. Not that he had a ton of lines this episode, probably just like a grunt as he got knocked unconscious, but just figured I'd throw that out there. With that, as promised, Emily, let's hear what you thought about this episode. Where are you coming from with this?
Yeah, that was interesting to hear. Harry's love of this episode makes me want to rewatch it, I guess, because I did not care for this episode that much. I think maybe Eugene's new voice actor threw me off right at the beginning, but I think they wrote Eugene's character to be, like, extra annoying in this episode, which Harry is mentioning, and, like, the overly cheerful optimism when Arnold and Harold are just miserable sitting up there and want, like, to commiserate kind of all together, or want to see the realistic side of it, which is that they've been stuck up in a tree where no one is around for, like, hours and hours, which is pretty absurd as a premise. But I think I just didn't like how Eugene was written in this episode to be over the top in an annoying way. Cause I like Eugene, and I felt, I don't know, maybe just bummed out about, like, the fact that he was written in a way that was grating on me and on anyone that would be watching it. And maybe that's a personal thing too, because he's kind of a queer coded character. So I don't know, but I thought it was funny when Harold was going off about how that he's going to end up living in this stupid tree with y'all forever. I'm never going to grow up or go to college or get married. Who am I going to marry? This squirrel. And then they go into that, like, imagined scenario where they're all grown men with long beards and wrinkles around their eyes. And Harold did, in fact, marry the squirrel in that imagined future scenario. And there's, like, it's all futuristic of a Hillwood depiction. So there's, like, trees floating up on, like, these metal landing pads way above the skyscrapers. And all of their friends are on these moving walkways that apparently are, like, all over the city and in the park and everywhere. So, like, a real Jetson-Z, or even made me think of Meet the Robinson style of futuristic cartoon. But yeah, I guess I just also was thinking a lot about the roller coaster episode from season 3, which is kind of the same episode, or very, very similar, with Eugene and Arnold getting stuck up in the roller coaster at Dinoland, and then the firemen have to, Lucky the hot fireman and crew, get the two out of the roller coaster that's stuck with the cherry picker. So it, again, even called back to that specific type of save at the end. So yeah, I think I was like, okay, I've seen this before, and I felt maybe personally attacked by the fact that Eugene's character was written in a more obnoxious way than usual, like more over the top. But other than that, yeah, Chocolate Boy was great. Really liked his bit. And yeah, I'll toss the mic back to you, Cody.
Nice. Caught it. Thanks for the toss. And thanks for the thoughts, the two of you. I think ultimately I'm in a place that draws maybe a little bit from what both of you put forth, which puts me in a fortuitous position as the third person to give takes. But all in all, I think I had fun with this. It is not that I think, I know I had fun with this as far as like bottle episodes, to take the, like the community, phrasing, and the level of absurdism that plays into this episode. Like that's, those characterizations just make for a really high floor for me in general. And pulling the idea of pulling a few vibrant personalities out of the cast of characters for Harold to put in the tree, and the fact that it was these three, I thought that was a really great recipe. And just like adding to the absurdism, just these little, not just the fact that they're stuck in a tree, but like the fact that they all get into the tree and get stuck in the tree through like various scenarios that were kind of funny. The fact that the lawnmower guy, which apologies to Craig Bartlett, lawnmower guy, and water tower worker, because Craig Bartlett was actually the voice of water tower worker. My memory failed me that time. But the fact that lawnmower guy got knocked out by a single cherry thrown by Eugene, who I imagine doesn't have, like, I don't know, I've never seen him pitch whenever they play baseball during these episodes. He can't have that great of an arm. So all that was pretty funny. And the fact that Arnold was the overly cool head to kind of mediate the other two, like very extreme and again, very vibrant personalities on literally either side of him, was a really good energy to take from this episode. There were, however, some there were some unusual energies also emanating from this. And to Emily's point, maybe it was the fact that it was a new voice actor for Eugene. That's evident right away. At least for, it was evident to us. Granted, we have been watching these sequentially for a couple of years now. You know, in production code order, as we are, as we often say, but the fact that it was a new voice followed by, and Emily, I agree with you. There was something different about Eugene's characterization this time. Whereas I think in situations like if he were singing in any other episode or doing anything that somebody else, like Harold, a very sort of like strong, you know, tough coded character, told him to stop, Eugene, I think, would be more likely to just like stop immediately or sort of defer to that individual instead of just like being oblivious. In the way that he was, it's not necessarily a big character change, excuse me. But it was enough for me to, cause like you need to pivot Eugene's personality just that little bit in order to make that conflict sing. Cause otherwise it would just be a lot of Harold dominating the interactions, because he's a very loud character. He's someone who says what he thinks. He's impulsive in that way. And so like, I realize in some way you need to give Eugene sort of an equal footing so that they are two level or sort of combatants on the same level with Arnold in the middle to sort of equally juggle the two of them. Whether or not it comes off that way, you know, it's tough to say. I found myself annoyed by Eugene as well. But that it's not necessarily an altogether negative energy. It is something that, that struck me and has stuck with me. Maybe we have other thoughts on that. The Chocolate Boy thing was funny. I think part of me maybe would have found it even funnier if Chocolate Boy never came back, because, and I remembered bits and pieces of this episode, not the actual resolution. I forgot that he, spoilers, does come back with the fire department at the end of the episode. So the fact that his character takes that extra leap and comes back and is not altogether driven by chocolate on this one occasion was very good and fun. And overall, I think this episode was good and fun. A few sort of unusual energies that I'm still wrestling with, but I think on the whole, I came out of this, you know, feeling like I had a pretty good time.
Yeah, it kind of reminds me of what's that one? I think it's like buses, subways, and something else, boats maybe, that Helga and Harold, when they get stuck at the Yahoo factory and then they have to make their way back on their own, in that there's just sort of like, there's like a combative energy that can feel a little bit weird or a little bit too negative for a show like this. I'm very sympathetic to Emily feeling attacked or at least feeling like weird about Eugene's characterization here, because specifically what you said, Cody, where like, it's not just that he is obnoxious, it's that he has like this profound obliviousness that like makes him not understand the way in which he could be being perceived as someone who is exacerbating a bad situation. Which like, if it was anybody else but Eugene, you would think he was doing it on purpose, or you would think that like he should know better. I think it kind of works for me because it is Eugene, and like Eugene is kind of that oblivious, and that's part of his charm. But also, and again, not to defend this, like I think that like being annoyed by this episode, which is kind of designed to annoy, is a completely understandable reaction. But what I kind of like about what happens here, and what I feel like is actually like really true to life, is that in this sort of like stressful situation, like all three of these characters, like stress responses make them extreme versions of themselves, right? Like Harold is never more Harold than he is right now, talking about how hungry he is, catastrophizing, being extremely melodramatic, threatening to pound people and be angry, refusing to be scared. Even Arnold, like, retreats into himself, right? Arnold has this big, long, elaborate future fantasy, which is very in keeping with Arnold, right? To sort of withdraw into himself and into his fantasies. So there's just something about, like, I like the idea that this is just an episode about, like, patience and tolerance in stressful situations, right? It's like the sort of thing where, like, I remember countless situations where, like, me and my friends or me and my sister or whatever, we were in situations we didn't want to be in. Maybe we were overtired, we were overextended, whatever. And like, all of a sudden, that one thing that annoys you about your friend is the only thing you notice about your friend, right? And it's just like, oh, I want to throttle this person. And like, I really like the idea that this is an episode about how, like, that is true, that will happen to everyone. And like, getting through those moments means sort of like taking a step back and understanding where you are and why you might be feeling that way, and how it might just like, they're like, what you're perceiving in them might be a reflection more of your mood or where you are right now than them, right? Because it's like, this is largely Eugene being Eugene. It's just that like, it's never come across as annoying because the situation has never been quite so dire for everybody involved, right? So I kind of, I don't know, I like that. I'm just nostalgic about this episode in general, I guess. It's just one that I've always recalled and really enjoyed. And honestly, like, frustrating as it is, I find Eugene so funny in this episode. Like the song he comes up with where he says, "Never let go of hope, it's a life-saving rope." It's like, God, shut up, Eugene. It's so funny when they go into the future in Arnold's mind, and Eugene is still like, any minute Chocolate Boy is going to come back, and Harold's like, it's been 70 years, Eugene. Chocolate Boy is not coming back, and he just won't give up. I don't know, I just like, I guess this is just such a nice, tight character episode for me. And like, I think we're going to talk about, like, it's only 10 minutes long. It's like the shortest episode of Hey Arnold maybe ever. And I don't know, there's just something about, like, it's so taut and it's so restrained in its scope. And I just really like it a lot, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah, totally fair. The one thing I'll say before tossing it off to Emily is that upsetting in that scenario, that fantasy scenario, he wouldn't be Chocolate Boy any longer. He'd be Chocolate Man for a number of years. Kind of wild that they messed that up. But I feel much better after that cathartic sort of expression of that fact. So I will I'll put myself back on mute, and I will pivot to our friend Emily.
Well, thanks, Cody. I think I'm just thinking about why else I don't really like this episode. It's good that other people do. It's good, Harry, you like it and everything. And it's fine that we don't have to agree on it either. But, I think also just because they're in the same setting too, it sort of, gets a bit not boring, but like, I don't know, there's no momentum, there's no action. You're just sitting with them and they're in the same headspace for the whole episode too. They don't really like adjust to having more hope or one way or the other. They all kind of stay within their coping skills, the same lanes that each of them have, like Arnold in retreating into himself, like Harry said, Harold just kind of whining and crying and shouting and being Harold, and Eugene doing the any minute now catchphrase, which I wish they had written less into the episode. It was like way too much, but maybe that's just also why I didn't really care for this episode that much. They're just in the same setting, same headspace, and nothing really changes, and you're just sitting on the branch, not even watching animation or anything, you know? That's my two cents on it.
No, that leads into something that I found myself thinking about as well, of just like, you know, the fantasy sequence, for one, it brought us off of the branch / out of the tree, which I thought was really cool. And I almost would have liked, because each of those three characters has such a different perspective on the situation, like just, you know, quick 20-30 second glimpse into each of their heads and be like, what is each of their fantasy sequence? What would a fantasy sequence look like for each of the three of them? Like what, like they're in projecting into the future, what would their views be of the situation? Like that would be, it would be something fun. It would obviously, again, they intended for this seemingly to be more of a closed, limited setting, even with the fantasy sequence. And I do think the perspectives on the branch, and maybe it is just me coming hot off of, I think last episode when we got really into the sort of new Bully on the Block, as like the day progresses, how the animation, appears different, how the color palette looks different. And I found myself gravitating toward that as well when I maybe wasn't as engaged with the, kind of like what the headspaces of these three characters were, with you know, the sun's position changing, just like noticing the colors pop in different ways, was a way that I like spending my time with this episode. And like on the note of paying attention to those colors, just I don't know if it was just this episode or what, but like Eugene seemed to have distinctly like off yellow teeth compared to the other characters. I don't
really
know if that's like a
me.
Thing
really bothered
yeah.
me.
Yeah, I don't know if that's something they've always done, and I haven't really noticed.
It is, actually. It is, but okay. It has always bothered me. I don't know why they decided to do that. Maybe just because his eyes are white. Harold's eyes are the color of Eugene's teeth and vice versa, which is also very strange to me and kind of freaks me out. It's interesting. I really like and respect Emily's opinion. It's so funny that like I think everything you described is accurate. It's just that I liked the effect that it had on me, right? Like, I also kind of find it like this episode is like single location and it's kind of annoying and it's sort of repetitive. And like, that's the idea, is to like create this mounting claustrophobia and frustration. I just think it works for me in this episode. Like, I like being there and like understanding and like sort of feeling the frustration and feeling the mounting desperation and sort of like paranoia or anxiety that's following these characters. But that being said, like, I think that like saying, hey, this episode was constructed to be annoying and boring, and I found it annoying and boring is like a very funny and good take, right? It's like, that's true. Like, it is both of those things.
For sure. I just also think that we've had such similar episodes with Roller Coaster and Das Subway from the first season, where we're in that same claustrophobic space and in their headspace of what that's like. But yet there's a lot more going on with the animation and side characters. And for me, at least, to grab onto and feel more interested in, like, there's forward movement. But I also see that's, yeah, the point of them literally being stuck here. So I'm ready for final shout-outs if y'all are.
Yeah, absolutely. Go for it.
I liked when Harold comes up to them underneath the branch, and Eugene and Arnold is now stuck up there with Eugene. And Harold is wanting to barter for nickels to save them. Like, his big idea is that he'll just get two nickels that'll equal, in his mind, 15 cents. And he's so excited about it. Yeah. And what was my other shout out? I really like Eugene's socks and sandals and the way he's sitting cross-legged in the tree. And he's like swinging his one leg and it's just kind of cute. So at least they did that for my boy instead of, I don't know, something even more annoying that they could have written in that way.
I'm super glad we got to see old everybody. To Cody's point, I would have loved to have seen old Chocolate Man. That would have been really funny, especially if he looked basically exactly the same. Would have been great. But seeing all of the old people and then getting to see the entire gang and hearing them referred to as the gang and the fact that they're all deaf, really funny. One of the funniest sort of like semi-understated jokes that I really love and is sort of absurd the way Cody said is that like, at first, Arnold comes on Eugene, and Eugene's like explaining how he came to be stuck in the tree. And Arnold doesn't say it because he's a nice guy, but you can tell Arnold's like, "What are you, an idiot? Like getting stuck in a tree? How stupid do you have to be?" And then, like, Arnold just immediately climbs up the tree and gets stuck. And then Harold sees them, and he says the same thing, right? He's like, "What? How stupid are you guys? Like, I wouldn't got a ladder. What are you? How dumb do you have to be to get stuck in a tree?" And then just immediately also gets stuck. That was just so funny to me. I just love that sort of escalation, and like, I feel like that's a very human thing. Where like, I can't tell you how many times I've had friends do that same thing, right? Or like, where you're like trying to open a can or something, and it's like, "Well, you idiot! Like, it's easy. Just here, give it to me." And then everybody just can't do it. So something about that really struck me. So yeah, shout outs to them. Shout outs to, again, the lawnmower man. Their funniest joke is in the future when they see him and he's still on the like floating walkways, still unconscious, still driving, and then Eugene quips, "You'd think he would run out of gas." I thought that was really funny.
I did also, and I also found Harold to be tremendously funny. He's my kind of my lone big shout out or my last shout out or whatever. And it's already been mentioned how funny he was on this episode. And I think if anything else, retreading the ground of Eugene getting into situations and like expressing his optimism and imprinting that upon everybody. If you're going to do it with him and Arnold again, bring in somebody else to also take into that like manic frame of mind. And Harold is the person to do that with. And he was extremely funny in that regard. But I'll, you know, not to cut this short, everybody had great thoughts. My pop filter actually got stuck up in a tree just outside, so I'm going to go fish it out. I can't imagine why it would take longer than a few moments, and then we'll be able to start up again. So don't touch that dial. We'll be right back with episode B. Don't go anywhere. Hey, one fun thing about this episode is that something Wikipedia calls the Helga short plays between episodes A and B, 85A and 85B. It's like I didn't time it out exactly, like a 60, 90 second, almost has the vibe of like a music video, but it's a montage of Helga.
A supercut, maybe you could call it?
Supercut, yeah, you could call it that. A supercut of Helga moments and like her being in love with Arnold, fawning over Arnold, having those sort of monologue-y type moments. What did y'all think about that?
It was jarring, first of all, I guess, because it is not really announced. It's just like, oh, for the first time ever, we're going to have sort of like a halfway through the anime interlude of Hey Arnold. Also, I thought it was really fun to see how different the animation is from seasons 1 to 5. That happened like so gradually, I guess I barely even noticed, but wow, did like the animation get a hell of a lot better from season 1 to season 5. Some of that season 1 stuff looked rough. So that was kind of exciting. I also just really loved all three stages of it. The first, like, Arnold's a boob, but I love him, and then hitting Brady. I thought it was really well constructed that way. So yeah, jarring, but delightful to watch. I really enjoyed it, I guess.
Yeah, I got a little kick out of it, and it was nice to see something unexpected, like a Helga commercial, Arnold commercial between episodes. And I really liked seeing the different styles of animation and the way they've drawn up the characters and design of the show, because they have it cut between different seasons, not all in like a chronological order, but so you're cutting back and forth between like the different Arnold lockets that Helga has. I especially like seeing all of those cut together And then, yeah, each of the brainy punches in the face. I don't know. I liked it. It was a fun little blip between the episodes that was totally unexpected. And maybe it's all thanks to Paramount Plus, our new sponsor.
Yeah, that's right. No ad space yet. I don't know. I'll check my inbox. Maybe we got some from them by this point with how much we're talking about them. But hey, rightfully so. They kept the Helga short. If anything, it made me super nostalgic for when, like, Nickelodeon, Cartoon Network, Disney Channel, they would do like those little short, like in lieu of a commercial, they would just slide in like a 60-second or 90-second,
yes,
like animated short or just like something promoting one of their programs that wasn't just like a toy ad or something like that. It really made me miss those. A different era of capitalism, to be sure, but it was really nice.
Because wasn't there a time when Disney Channel literally didn't do ads? So, like, all of the interludes in their shows were just Disney Channel products or whatever, or like Disney products. Wow, what a bygone age that is. Remember watching TV and seeing commercials and stuff? that's crazy to think about. I found this so cute. I thought it was really cute, and I thought it was like a really great sort of like victory lap almost about like, hey, remember how much you like watching this show that you're watching right now? And I was like, yeah, hey, Arnold, I do remember that. I love Helga, and I think this is a really good idea, and thank you for reminding me before I start the next episode.
Right, totally. Closing this out, everybody, scale of 1 to 5. What do y'all give it? I give it a 5. I had to think really long and hard about it. But what are y'all's ratings?
It's a 5 for me. Oh, wow. Emily, what do you got?
I'll go 4.7.
Wow. Ooh, tough.
Are we rounding up, tough, or are we critic truncating?
Just doing a pitchfork style, so.
Fair enough. Well, there you have it. No free ad space for Pitchfork either, but thank you, Helga, for existing so that we have the Helga short to bask in. A true artifact of a beautiful era of television. Thank you. Welcome back to Stoop Kids, a Hey Arnold podcast. We've got episode 85B up next, and that episode is called Rhonda Goes Broke. Original air date January 5th, 2001. The Wikipedia-sanctioned episode summary is as follows. Rhonda's family goes broke, and they move into the boarding house. The end. And once again, shouting out the folks who made this episode possible. This time we had Frank Weiss in the director's chair, and we had Robert Lamoureux in the writer's recliner. Patent pending. Let's take it to Emily now for opening thoughts. Emily, what did you think about Rhonda going broke?
Hey, thanks for asking, Coobs. I like this episode, and I think it's because I just like Rhonda's character. I get a kick out of her. I think she's a pretty funny and I don't know another synonym to throw out there at the moment, but she's a pretty funny character, and we've seen her in pretty similar situations, or where her character kind of remains the same, is what I mean to say, but. This one, she doesn't really learn anything, and so that's kind of true of her other episodes. But her parents are standouts here, and I think they gave, yeah, great performances. It's sort of like a rich kid episode like we've had with Lorenzo's character, who kind of was sort of just a one-off a little bit and was kind of on the sidelines in some other episodes, but Rhonda is like the series regular rich kid, so just a good premise to see what it's like for her to completely lose her identity and all of her money and her family, the Wellington Lloyd family. What was I going to say? Oh my God. What else about it? I like that they immediately move into Sunset Arms. And which Rhonda's mom describes as having a sort of bohemian charm to it. And the boarders are playing it up extra goofy when the Wellington Lloyds get in there and make it even harder for them to stand being there in a like shared community space with one bathroom and some eccentric characters. And Yeah, but yeah, Rhonda ultimately doesn't really learn anything at all. I just think it's, I guess, an interesting episode, for lack of a better word, because I think she's kind of a fun character and her performances are pretty dynamic, I'd say, in the series. But also, I don't know, I'm maybe biased as a yuppie snob myself, as Helga describes Rhonda at the beginning of the episode. It was funny too when Rhonda called the kids common brown baggers at the in the cafeteria, like their lunch bags. A funny moment there. She's also trying to call the fashion police on her best friend in the bathroom with the Nadine wearing the same shoes 2 days in a row. But otherwise, I don't know. There's like a great grandma moment where grandma's running through Sunset Arms going, ah, ha, 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 and she's in like a full medieval costume with an axe over her head and she's chasing Abner, Arnold's pet pig, because it seems they're trying to prepare a big family meal. But she doesn't actually harm Abner or anything. It's just a funny grandma moment. And yeah, I think Rhonda's dad was a standout, though. I thought he was really hilarious and his line reads are great. He tells someone, maybe grandpa, I don't really have a job per se, but I dabble in international finance. And he also later says when, which there was a really great like power walking, when Ron is power walking with the rubber ducky dress, that she like kind of is reinventing herself as a DIY yuppie. She's power walking and the horns go off though, because her parents now have money again all of a sudden, and they're pulling up to the side of the road there. And her dad goes, yeah, it turns out our stocks bounced right back and we're rich again. Bought you another scarf, Rhonda. And her mom is like, yeah, you'll need it tonight when we go to Aspen. Or, yeah, just really funny. Her parents are great in that they are goofs, rich, snobby goofballs. And I don't know. I just like her character, and I guess that's why I like this episode. But I don't think it necessarily gives her anything to learn from. But as a kid or whoever's watching it, or us, it's just kind of knocking down snobbish people. Maybe the writer's knocking down Hollywood folks. Who knows? But yeah, it's about all of that and class, and being rich doesn't need to be your one source of personality and identity, which Rhonda has taken it to be. And I guess she maybe kind of learns a little bit in that way and then kind of throws the lesson back out the door when she hops in the car. But anyway, I've gone on for too long, and I'll kick it back to you.
Nice. Yeah, thank you. And I guess I'll just note really quickly that this podcast does historically have a slight bit of sympathy for certain, you know, snobby rich folks. Looking at you, Lorenzo's mom. On that note, Harry, over to you. What'd you think of this episode?
Yeah, thanks. I think that was really well characterized, Emily. I love this episode as like a, and maybe this is just me being too you know what, but like it's kind of a meta commentary on Rhonda episodes, right? Where like we've talked before about how the funny thing about Rhonda is, even more so than other characters, she always defaults back to her starting position. And it's because she has the wealth and resources to do so. Like, the fact that she's so wealthy insulates her from having to make real changes, because she can always default back to that identity. This episode, like, confronts that head on, right? In no uncertain terms. And I love that it, like, formulaically almost subverts a traditional Hey Arnold episode, where, like, it looks like Rhonda is going to learn something, right? From Arnold, as she has, it must be said, many times before, right? Like when she gets glasses or when she goes to charm school. And there's always the second act where Rhonda learns something. We get like a tiny, tiny little sampling of that in this episode. And then right when she's making it work for her, the show pulls the rug out from under us again and is like, nope, Rhonda's back to being rich. She tries to give Arnold a tip demonstrating that like she doesn't see him as like a friend or an equal. He's just a pauper to her. She's learned nothing. Like, we're back on it. It's like a really hilarious commentary on Rhonda as a character, and also like grappling with the powerlessness that Hey Arnold often goes with. I really like this idea that Rhonda as a character sort of represents that, like, hey, like, you, maybe if you're an Arnold, you're going to see characters like Rhonda throughout your life, right? It's like there is sort of like a clear karmic path to their life. There are lessons that they should clearly be learning from their ups and downs, and they're never going to learn those lessons, and they're never going to be punished for not learning those lessons because they're rich, right? Or because X, Y, or Z. Like, lots of people, like, you think that they should be learning something, you think they should be growing or changing somehow. They're just not doing that. There's nothing you can do about that, and you just have to sort of like deal with that, right? It's like, like, Arnold, if he was anybody else, would be frustrated by this turn of events, right? But, like, he has the, like, the wherewithal to sort of be like, well, like, whatever, you know? It was like, you can lead the horse to water, but you can't make her drink. It's, and I also just love that as, like, a commentary on, like, rich people in general. I don't know that that's particularly pointed, but I do think it's not an accident that, like, Rhonda never has to learn anything because she's rich, right? It's like, she's always going to be bailed out. She's never going to have to like grow or change or confront her inadequacies or even like learn that her personality needs to be something other than being rich, because she'll always have that, right? And like, she had this horrible existential fear, right? Where like, as soon as she's not rich, she doesn't know who she is anymore. And she's having this like panic attack, literally, Arnold is walking by her boarding house room and she's crying, why? She says, you know, I'm rich. That's all I've ever been good at. And Arnold says, like, that's pathetic. Like, that's not a human personality trait. It turns out Rhonda can make it that way, though, right? And that, is that fair? No. Is it right? No. Is it what's right even for Rhonda? No. But like, hey, that's just the way the world works sometimes, right? I really like this sort of like surprise ending almost, where it's just like, yep, like, you thought Rhonda was going to learn a lesson, but that's just not the type of thing that's going to happen, because that's not the type of thing that happens to people like Rhonda. So I really like this episode. Like you said, Emily, I think Rhonda's a great character. You got to love her, even when she's being the worst, as she often is, especially early on in this episode. You always love to see the Wellington Lloyds. The mom and dad are both so funny. I think like Stuck in the Tree, sort of an interesting 1-2 pairing about powerlessness and just sort of like accepting the things you can't change. And also episodes that, in my opinion, demonstrate that the show still got the juice, which I'm really excited about. What did you think, Cody? What did you think about this episode's juice?
Yeah, well, first and foremost, my biggest thought is that I don't want to hear you say the word juice in that way again. That's pretty unnerving. But any episode we get with Rhonda, and like this one especially, they play as these almost like dramatically ironic fables where Rhonda is just clueless about this crucial piece of knowledge. In every episode, it's something along the lines of like, hey, actually, it's okay to not have a shitload of money. You know what I mean? That's something she's continuously learning. This one, again, this episode especially, we're all in the know. We the writing's on the wall. We know what she's gonna have to overcome. We've seen her before. We know her character, and we love her character. I also love Rhonda as a character. She's extremely fun, and I think the fact that she has this particular arc juxtaposed directly against the boarding house, an environment that we're extremely familiar with, and have just sort of, you know, we love its coziness, we love it for its flaws as well, and so having like the Wellington Lloyds come in and just be grossed out by, or Rhonda, I guess, pointedly, you know, being grossed out by the imperfections and things like that, the Oscar salami thing where that gross looking salami that they eat, that was like maybe one step too far. Everything else is just kind of like, this is endearing. And you know, it's the lovable boarding house and the lovable boarders. Like, well, what's, you know, and Rhonda spends the rest of her are trying to not just appreciate, them, but that style of living. And I like where we, I like where we end with this episode. I like the sentiment we end on. Arnold just flat out calling Rhonda pathetic, and then her, learning, as it was said, just like for a brief moment, like what lesson should she should be taking away from this? And then her parents coming by and saying like, "Hey, just kidding, we're rich again." The ending that I think most of these episodes have, where everything comes up Rhonda, I liked this particular iteration of it a little bit more than I did in polishing Rhonda, just because her struggle was internal, and like it's funny to watch her struggle with something so stupid like this, and having her being told she's pathetic and then get money at the end. Like it's a funny, cruel twist that as you two have said, like this show goes back to, and it's certainly not an accident, but the fact that the struggle is within her and not necessarily externally tethered between her and Patty. And I think that's where a lot of my sort of more sour feelings about the conclusion of polishing Rhonda came from, is just because like, man, I felt just so bad for Patty because she got played so hard. But that's not really the case this time. The struggle is really just Rhonda's. Like, her parents are making the best of the situation. They're just kind of whatever about it. And eventually they get the money back, so it's also further whatever. But it's Rhonda crying to Arnold, and Arnold being like, get over it. You're a pathetic person. He didn't use his words. He did say pathetic, which again was very cathartic and great. And our gripes against the very rich people in our own real world. Really fun to see Arnold pop off like that, even if it's just, you know, relative to him. So I don't know. I'm kind of rambling at this point, but all that is to say, I really liked I liked the Rhonda energy, Rhonda episode energy in general. I liked this one, I think, particularly more. They got into a really good group with her character this episode, I think, and her family as well.
Yeah, the Wellington Lloyd family definitely has some fun energy to them. That's what wealth will do to you, I guess. But I was thinking about her, the fact that money and having wealth and having the nicest, finest things in life is her biggest personality trait, quote unquote. The writers have done such a good job, though, of building it out way further than that, I think, and making it. I mean, she seems like a really fleshed out character, in my opinion. But if that is her one biggest personality trait, so she kind of goes from like thinking she's better than everyone because she has these finer things and the best of the best, the cream of the crop, top shelf everything, what have you. But then she takes that personality trait in this episode when she loses, her family loses wealth, takes that same identity and hones in on like, okay, well now I'll just have all these custom made things. She gets creative. She like pulls down the shower curtain with the rubber ducky pattern, makes a dress out of it. She like starts decorating her brown bag or lunch bags. But she, instead of kind of like turning a new leaf in that way and having like a more interesting personality where she can demonstrate that creativity in some sort of way, it's then just used as, well, yeah, I have custom made things. I, you know, no one else has this type of thing. So it's still the same approach to being better than everyone as her like main crux of her personality. And I just think that's funny and a good way of showing how she hasn't grown, even if she's kind of like changed some behaviors and stuff given the situation. But I also think that the situation is like pretty extreme in the episode. So I don't know. She does the best she can, maybe as far as a Rhonda Wellington Lloyd can do, given these stakes.
That's a really good point, Emily, about how the fact that like internally she still has the same sort of like value system, even when she's quote unquote poor. She doesn't really understand what Arnold is trying to tell her, right? What she takes away is like, oh, like I can put in special effort to be better than other people rather than just being better than them because I have money. Not like you're not actually better than anybody else, whether or not you have money. I also just love the like, this is almost like a tragedy of Rhonda Wellington Lloyd, right? Where like like you said, Emily, she does get creative, right? There is the suggestion that, like, and Arnold is, like, trying to get her here, where it's like, this could be good for you, Rhonda. Like, you could learn how to be a human being. You could learn how to be, like, one of us and understand what we're going through and, like, establish a real personality for yourself. And then, like, all of that is just like, no, that's not going to happen. Like, you might have thought it was going to happen for, like, a second, but that's just not the way it is. I think that's really funny. I think that, like, the comedy in this episode is similarly absurd to Stuck in a Tree, but it's just really on point, right? Like, I think that Rhonda is such a melodramatic character. She has such a flair for that, and I really love how, like, ridiculous her ups and downs are. And even the fact that, like, the fact that her ups and downs are so pronounced is just something that the characters sort of grow inured to, right? Where it's like, oh yeah, that's Rhonda. She's doing this right now, but, like, she'll be back on top again, and, like, she's not going to learn anything. You just have to sort of, like, let her do what she's going to do. I thought that was really funny.
Yeah, I love the humor in this episode. And they used Peapod Kid in it, too, just to have a back and forth with Rhonda and demonstrate, like, the upper class kid characters. And Peapod Kid breaks the news to everyone at recess that, yeah, word of the country club is my father's selling your house and turning it into low-income condominiums, or he says something like that. Yep. He's hardly in the series, but well used here.
Yeah, that was going to be my big shout-out, is that it's so funny that they call him Peapod Kid, and that's, like, just literally a nod to fans, because that character's never had a name, except in the first episode he was a peapod. And so they were just like, ah, let's just do that. And, like, now finally in season 5, literally a character in the show is just like, hey, Peapod Kid. It's like, why wouldn't they just give him a name? But I like this more. It's really, really funny.
Yeah, I was also going to remark on that. Not, like, to spend, like, too much time on it, but the fact that he started out as the, oh, beans, I thought they were legumes, or whatever his line is in the Downtown is Fruits episode, and then very stealthily in the background, slowly but surely, he's only had a few other appearances in the series, but he has been retooled up to this point as the sort of like rich world counterpart or corollary to Rhonda. He was for sure a guest at the party she was trying to throw, that sort of like exclusive party, and I can't remember if he was in Polishing Rhonda as well. It wouldn't shock me if he was, but just like retooled for that specific purpose of like, we need another set of very vaguely familiar footprints in this world, so it's not just like Rhonda calling out to it, because that is, I'm sure Craig and friends decided at some point, like, this is a world that we want to poke and prod at on subsequent occasions, and just going back to the Rhonda well to do the Rhonda Wellington to do that would be, I don't know, just like, they're stronger if they cast a few more lines on Peapod Kid was one of those lines, and it was really nice seeing him here and used for that particular purpose.
What is the episode where he goes, oh, that's terrible, terrible news? I cannot remember that episode, but I remember that line reading very well.
Yeah, I think you're thinking of any James Stewart movie.
And or Aaron Grossman, I guess.
Yeah, I suppose. Yeah, shout out to our friend Aaron Grossman. Yeah. I cannot remember off the top of my head. I'm sure he does that. Now that you say it, and my mind immediately goes to the real life legendary dead actor. I don't know why I had to put it like that. James Stewart is obviously no longer alive. I'm derailing myself. I cannot remember.
Known for sure being the wiki... dead actor Jim Stewart.
That's right.
We are so canceled by now.
We are. Peapod Kid is going to snitch on us just like he snitches on his pal Rhonda. That Peapod Kid's trajectory, let's not romanticize it. He becomes a dirty capitalist snitch, Peapod Kid does. And you know what? Unless he's got attractive mom like Lorenzo, I am not backing him in any sense. Anybody got anybody else to say? Please don't let us go out on that note.
I've got some shout outs. All right. Cody's giving me double thumbs up. Shout out to needing a fancy scarf to go to Aspen. Shout out to the naming of Rhonda Wellington Lloyd. Really, really good naming structure there. and it just rolls right off the tongue too. It's a fun name to say. And then I wanted to shout out one other line, as Rhonda calls him Daddy, when he's in the house hugging Rhonda's mom and he's just in the socks. He like has lost his shoes, even that everything's falling apart around them, and there's movers grabbing things out of the apartment and or house or mansion or whatever it is that they live in. He says, "Rhonda, honey, maybe you should sit down." And she's about to sit down and the mover grabs the chair out from underneath her and he goes, "Or stand if you prefer," which was so funny to me. Super shout out to the Rhonda dad.
Yeah, shout out to Ernie and his big, disgusting, hairy chest that he's constantly talking about in this episode. I really love that they play up how gross the borders are. And also just like classic Hey Arnold interlude slash detour that like this episode's really got it all, right? It's like I would have been totally comfortable with just PS-118, but like there's a whole second act where we get to see all the borders again. And it's like, what a bonus, you know? So shout outs to the borders, Mr. Wynn coughing up a storm, fighting at, dinner over the salami, Oscar sleeping in their bed for some reason with his salami. Really good stuff all around. This episode has really got the juice, right, Cody?
Again, really don't like that. Cannot emphasize enough how bad that hits my ears. I'm going to take the segue in a different direction. You're right, Harry. It is really good seeing the borders, and we hope you were not bored listening to this episode. Whether or not you were, thank you for listening to Stoop Kids, a Hey Arnold podcast. You can follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Stoop Kids Pod, and that's kids spelled with a Z. This episode was produced by super producer Jason Defness, and you can find him on Twitter at Nintendoofus. I've been Cody Narveson. You can find me on Twitter at Cody_BH.
I'm Harry Mack, and you can find me on Twitter at Shiitake Harry.
And I've been Emily Suey. You can find me on Instagram at Emily Suey.
That's right. And oh, hey, Emily, Harry, just I don't know if you saw this. Our stocks bounced right back. We don't have to look at that. We don't have to. We don't have to do this. We don't have to sit here anymore. Let's get out of here.
Let's see Rhonda go broke.
Let's see Rhonda go broke. I will jump in again at 34:32.